Hi, everybody. This is Annie Cipetta. Welcome to the Behind Our Eyes book launch interview with Peter Altschul and Deborah Kendrick. It's October 6th, 2022. Everybody, welcome. And I'm going to hand this over to Deborah to start.
Okay. Thank you so much, Annie. I'm going to tell you a little bit about this book and a little bit about Peter, but we're mostly going to hear from Peter about the book. Riding Elephants, Creating Common Ground Where Contention Rules is Peter Altschul's third book, and it's not about safaris. How can we create common ground at home, on the job, and in faith communities? How can we work together better to address those contentious culture war conflicts that divide us by becoming better at riding our quirky feelings, elephants, through marshaling our less quirky thoughts? This concept is explored through brief essays on topics ranging from family life, organization behavior and music, to Christianity, public policy, and politics. The essays focus on lessons drawn from the author's experience interviewing for jobs, raising stepchildren, playing music, training New York City taxi drivers, watching sports, shepherding dogs, finding common ground on abortion, leading diversity programs, and loving his wife. They suggest that common ground does exist if we can find patience, skill, and grace to create it. Peter Altschul currently lives in Columbia, Missouri. This is his third published book. I first knew about Peter's writing when he contacted me about a decade ago. He wanted some input from another writer, and he was writing a book and he wanted me to take a look at it, make comments, write a blurb. I did it because that's what you do. I did it to be nice. I didn't really know him very well, but what I remember is being really blown away by the book and really enjoying it. And I can still remember, it's probably been 10 years since I read it, but the scene that he drew of his wedding and the music and the friends, it was just vivid and vibrant and just beautiful writing. I really like what Peter wrote himself about the author at the end of this book we're going to talk about. So I'm going to share that too, because I think there are a couple of eyebrow raisers in it about the author. For some unknown reason, Peter Altschul was born totally blind. I like that, by the way. Since graduating from college, he has traveled a unique journey. Customer service rep at the most hated federal government agency. And yes, you are going to have to tell us who that was. Musician, author, trainer of New York City taxi drivers, educator, step-parent of three children, grants manager, and mediator for pro-choice, pro-life activists, and workplace diversity specialist, all done with the assistance and companionship of six wonderfully quirky guide dogs. So, Peter, I have a lot of questions for you, but for fun, why don't you tell us what that most hated federal government agency was, first of all?
It's the Internal Revenue Service.
I thought so. That
was my first job out of undergraduate school. And I did that for 4 years and couldn't wait to move on to something else.
Well, for those who have not read Riding Elephants, I, first of all, strongly recommend it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. There's so much thought here and so many places where you want to go back, read that again, think about that again. But I think there are a couple of places that I want to visit. By the way, I do have to say, Peter, thank you so much for mentioning my name in the same book where you mentioned Aretha Franklin and Amanda Gorman. Doesn't get much better than that.
So, happy to do it.
So, but with that, I love what you wrote about the Aretha Franklin song. And why don't we start there? Because that tells us a little bit about you as a musician and an author and a thinker. And I'd just like to hear you talk about it.
Well, the first time I heard Aretha sing, I was a 10-year-old kid in white bread New York State, and really wasn't that familiar with Motown. I sort of was, but not a lot. But Aretha really got my attention. That song, Respect of Hers, And it really sort of changed the way I listened to music in a very powerful way. I can't say more than that. It's just I heard things differently after that song. Aretha sort of popped up in my life at weird moments. I mean, we all know she had a huge career, went on for many years and many different guises. And growing up, I was just beginning to start learning to play the drums. And she had such a rhythmic drive, and she had a band with such a rhythmic drive to it, that it really sort of influenced the way I play drums then and still play drums now. And of course, her voice doesn't need to be added to comment about that. So anyway, when she died, Sirius XM had a channel devoted to her music, which I listened to quite a lot when I wrote that piece. And I had no idea of sort of the diversity of her styles, especially later. I mean, she actually sang hip-hop music to hip-hop beats, which I didn't know. And I didn't know a lot about her civil rights background. And that was really interesting. I mean, she really played a key role in that whole scene. One more comment, the word respect. What does it mean to respect people? And what she essentially says is, find out what it means to me and then do it, right? R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. So, you know, it's in order to respect, you have to sort of know what it means for the other person to be respected, which might not be the same thing as what makes you feel respected. And so I talk about the platinum rule, which is not the golden rule. And the platinum rule says, treat others as they want to be treated, not the golden rule, which is treat others the way you want to be treated. And that had a powerful impact on me as well. So anyway, it was just one of those pieces. Aretha had a very powerful part of my life and an influential part of my life. You know, 10 years old is the time when you just begin to start growing and reaching out beyond yourself. And she was one of those people.
Fabulous. I got to hear her, by the way, at one of the last concerts she did before she died in August of 2017. Fabulous. So there are so many places that I could revisit, but one that I kept going back to is near the beginning of the book. You're talking about rubber bands and so forth. And you say, again, folks, if you haven't read the book, there is so much thought here about differences and diversity and coming together, i.e. creating common ground. But this particular few sentences, just I kept coming back. Some Jews who criticize Israel are accused by other Jews of not being really Jewish. Some African Americans accuse Blacks with conservative views of not being Black enough. Some ISIS members behead Muslims who don't believe as they do. And you do mention disability as you lead into that. But of course, for those of us who are blind or who have other disabilities, this just resonates on such a deep level. And I just thought it would be interesting to hear you talk a little bit about that from a disability perspective and how we as people with disabilities might find common ground or might not treat one another as well as we might.
Well, so a couple of comments. The first is that we talk about with admiration those people who reach across those barriers to find common ground with people who strongly disagree with you. You know, so I did that work a lot in the abortion issue, for example. And that was great work, and it's work I'm very proud of. But one of the things I've come to realize over time that maybe the harder work is to help people in your own group to be more effective listeners or to be more effective advocates. And one of the things that we do not do to be an effective advocate is to criticize people we don't agree with at the level that we're talking about. So those things that I mentioned about folks who are Jewish and folks who are African Americans and folks who are ISIS is real. And this happens in every group. It doesn't matter if you're disabled, non-disabled. And it is the responsibility, I think, of those of us in whatever group you choose to be in to say things like, hey, to people who don't agree with the basic whatever of the group, that doesn't mean we kill you, whether it be physically or symbolically. It means we don't agree on certain things, but we might agree on other things. And I really do think that in today's politics, we have so much going on within groups, the sort of cancel culture, which exists on both the right and the left, that it's just destructive. It's destructive, not just for having those conversations across those barriers, but within the groups as well. It's just destructive. And the more we can do as members of those groups to discourage that kind of behavior, I think the better off we're all going to be.
I think we do it as blind people. We say, oh, well, Stevie Wonder might be fabulous musician, rich and famous, but did you know he can't find his way out of the room? So those kinds of things. Or someone did such and such really well. Well, that's because they have some usable vision. But either end of the spectrum, I think we do that.
And this whole ACV versus NFB thing is just, there are there are clearly differences. And that's fine.
Yeah.
But some of the stuff I hear from both groups with the other group is just wildly destructive for us as advocates and us as people.
Peter, now that would be the ultimate coup. I have been saying for years that I believe I will live long enough to see them merge as one, because they should. But now that would be the ultimate coup. Then you could write a whole book just about that, about that the finding. We should take a look at that. So talk to us about, I like the whole idea of riding elephants and elephants as feelings and thoughts, but talk about the origin of that and your thought processes of carrying that through to be the title and theme of your book.
Well, the idea came from a guy named Jonathan Haidt, H-A-I-D-T. No, it's not the hate, it's the hate, H-A-I-D-T. and he's a social psychologist who wrote a book about this whole topic. And one of his ideas, as I write in the book, that elephants, he calls them intuitions, which I think are close to feelings, if not feelings directly. And feelings, he argues, and I sort of expand on, is the energy behind what we do. It's not the thoughts, it's the feelings. The feelings is the energy. And that we, as elephant riders, can be more effective at riding our elephants or controlling our feelings and steering them in positive direction. Feelings are great things if harnessed effectively. Elephants are just amazing animals. They're herd animals. They roam in herds and they look after their young and they look after their old and they're very playful. And all those things are true about them. But if they get upset, they can trample and cause all kinds of destruction. And you don't want elephants to trample. That's not something that you want to be a part of if you can avoid it. And the same thing is true about feelings. You know, feelings, if used effectively, can be amazingly powerful things and are amazingly powerful things. And I write a lot about that in the book.
So in the process of pulling these pieces together as a book, which came first, assembling them and deciding later that elephants was the thread that could tie them together, or first thinking about riding elephants and wanting to find the pieces fit into that?
It's definitely I should back up. My prior book is called Connecting the Dots. It's the same subtitle, Creating Common Ground or Contention, Breaking It Down and Connecting the Dots. I think I would know this, right? Breaking it down and connecting the dots. And so I wrote that book. And one of the things I didn't like about that book is the blog posts, I think, were equally good that I used as the kernels of the book, but there was no common theme. And so when I wrote the Riding Elephants, I thought, okay, how can I make this more organic? And the whole kernel of both books was this idea of elephants as feelings, and we ride our elephants through our thoughts. And so I really made an effort when I wrote this book, Riding Elephants, to really use that elephant as the theme. And you'll see throughout the book, I talk about my elephant grumbling, or my elephant becoming restless, or my elephant celebrating, yeah, my elephant doing whatever. And that was deliberate. When I wrote the original blogs on which the books are based, you don't see that in the original blogs. But when I went through and edited the book, I made an effort to sort of use that elephant theme in hopefully creative ways. That's the history behind all of that.
Well, it works.
Well, thank you.
How often do you write your blog? How frequently?
Actually, I haven't written a blog for about a year. And there are complicated reasons for that. I've gone through a fairly traumatic personal life, which just made me not want to write. I'm sort of coming out of that now. But the other issue is I've written two books on this whole issue of creating common ground and feelings and thoughts and all those concepts that are in these books. And I'm not quite sure what I want to do next writing-wise. And I've been thinking a lot about it, and I have some ideas, but I just don't have a sense of where to go next. And as I said, over the past year, I've had to move twice. I'm going through some difficult times, which I will talk about other times, but not now. And it's just been a difficult time. And so the writing has sort of gone on a back burner. And the other thing I should say about that is I know there are many folks on this call that they find they're passionate about writing, that for them, writing is a serious passion. And that's awesome. And I admire that. But it's never been true for me. Writing has never been a passion of mine. I do it because it helps me communicate. But it's not something I and passionate about doing. It's not something that makes my elephant dance. It's something that makes my elephant sort of, okay, I got to do this. It makes the elephant, you know, not especially excited. And so it's not something that I, as compared to my music, which makes my elephant dance, or when I educate in the work that I've done, make my elephant dance. But writing never has done that for my elephant. It's just different.
Another thing that's interesting about what you say about your own writing and the motivation to write is that I think for many people, times of struggle and despair and trauma, when many of us write the most. And yet you're saying that the opposite is true. You're going through difficult times. You don't want to write. You can't write.
Yeah, I don't want. It's just not something I want to do. And maybe there'll come a time when I will want to do that. I haven't forsworn writing forever and ever. But, you know, this isn't the time right now. I'm trying to figure out what my next impetus is to write. And I have some thoughts on the matter. And maybe I'll be there tomorrow. Maybe I'll be there a year from now. But I will write again. What I find it doing a lot more these days is helping people with their writing. I very much enjoy doing that. I love the editing process more than the actual putting things down. I think honing a piece and making it shine and making it crystalline clear, I enjoy that part more than the actual putting it down. That's just me. Great.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you have had a fair amount
of experience working with groups, bringing groups together, finding common ground. Can you choose one such experience that you've had that you're particularly proud of and tell us about that?
It's funny you should ask that question because somebody else asked me a similar question in a job interview. I was working in Glendale, Arizona, working with the community to help them develop strategies to prevent teen pregnancy that the entire community could get behind. When I first showed up there the first day, the agency that was coordinating this work drove us around the community. And the community was divided in half between northern half, which was the white bread part of the community, and then the southern half had this large Latino population. And so I said to the person convening the organization, convening this project, what's the relations between the two parts of the organization? And she said, I never go to this part of the community. I don't know these people. I don't know who they are. And my basic reaction was, excuse me? I didn't say this before. How can you be a community organizer and not take half of the community seriously? I sort of talked around and tried to find out who the leader of that, the Latino part of the community was. Then when I got back to Washington, I got a hold of her and said, hey, we're doing this project. We very much would like to get you involved. Would you consider it? She said, yeah, but I don't know anything about the other part of the community. They don't talk to me. I said, well, I will try to make that happen. And so I called the representative who I was working with and said, hey, they want to work with you. Do you want to work with them? And she said, well, I don't know. I said, well, you can't do this without having the entire community involved. It ain't going to work. So she was clearly really nervous about it. So I said, okay, well, the next time I come out there, we'll schedule a meeting. We scheduled a time and they all showed up in neutral territory. I can't remember where it was we all met. I just served as a mediator and got them to talk about each other, to talk to each other about their experiences, what their communities were experiencing. And after the meeting, I was sort of nervous. I wasn't sure how it was going to play itself out. After the meeting, they became friends and they start talking to each other. And it totally changed the way the dialogue ran. One of the things that came out of it is that there were sort of youth groups on both sides of the border, if you will, and they went on a weekend retreat and actually got to like each other and know each other. And it really was a sort of a fabulous thing. And of course, they worked together on the dialogue. There were some councilmen who got involved who were representing that part, the Latino part of the community. And it really was a wonderful thing to sort of see grow. So the dialogue was a success. That connection, at least when I was there, was vibrant and really exciting. I don't know what's happened since, but while I was there, it was a great, great thing.
That's fabulous. Are you looking toward doing more of that sort of thing, or are you kind of in a holding pattern right now?
Well, I'm actually applying for jobs that would give me the chance to do more of that stuff. Whether they'll hire me is a different conversation, but I've applied to several jobs that have a major community building component. We'll see what happens, but I am trying to sort of get back into that life, if you will. It's been a difficult couple of years and I'm trying to sort of get out of it. So we'll see what happens.
Well, I always like to ask writers about their writing habits and writing process, but you're telling us you haven't been writing for a while. But when you were, are there any tips that you'd like to share or quirks maybe, or, you know, patterns that you follow in terms of your writing life when you are writing?
I find it easier to write not in my apartment. That might mean writing outside on a deck. When I had a house, that's what I did. with the sun out and the wind and the birds chirping. That was wonderful. Or writing at a coffee house. I don't particularly like coffee, but it was nice to be able to get out and walk the mile to the coffee house, buy a tea, actually, and write for a couple of hours there. I wrote at a church room. So I just find it hard to write where I live. I need to be in a different space. And the other thing, as I said before, is I very much enjoy more the editing process than the actual putting it down. And what I had to learn to do is not to worry so much about the editing when I'm writing it down. I know that I'll come back to it and make it shine or make it better shine or whatever it is. And so just be able to get it down on paper. And that's been really hard for me because I like to get every sentence perfect. But then, of course, you run the risk of losing the thread that you're trying to get down. So that's been a challenge. But that's really the only thing I can say. The requisite, you know, try to get input from other people and all that stuff is really valuable. But for me, I really very much enjoy, once the stuff's on paper, the idea is, how can I make this work in a cohesive kind of way that will make people want to read it?
Well, I think that's wonderful to recognize that, because I learned long ago, and, you know, sometimes we don't know things until we have to do them, but editing and writing are really two completely different talents, and both are really essential if we're all going to have good things to read. So maybe there's another kind of future there for you in just doing some editing. I really like hearing you talk about going somewhere else to write. I completely get that. I've gone through phases. When I was in college, this shows how old I am, I had a typewriter. I thought it was the coolest thing that I had a portable typewriter that I could carry to sit under a tree. And I was convinced that with my guitar under that tree or my typewriter under that tree, the most beautiful words would emerge. So anyway, I get it. I see that we have 22 people. And so that's 20 people who might have questions for you. So I don't want to monopolize Peter. Why don't we open it up at this point, Annie? And I don't know who's doing the monitoring. It's not.
I am doing the monitoring. So if you have a question, please raise your hand and I'll call on you, and then you can unmute and ask your question. Marlene has a question.
Oh, Marlene. Okay.
Yes.
Because cool. I can come up with more. Never fear.
Oh, I'm sure. Okay.
And then after Marlene, we can do Alice, and then we'll go to the next two.
Okay. All right. Marlene.
Hi. I just thought I'd let you know, Peter, on the transcript, you have a new last name. It's now I'll Show.
That's okay. Thank you for that bit of data. My elephant doesn't quite know what to make of it. He's sort of bewildered, you know.
We'll fix it.
Thank you.
Oh, dear. Okay. All right. There was somebody else.
Alice?
Yeah, Alice.
Well, again, Peter, congratulations on three wonderful books. I enjoyed reading each of these and look forward to number four. I hope one of these days. I find it interesting that passion is not your writing, because you're such a good writer. But I'm very glad to hear that you're interested in editing, because you do give wonderful advice about writing to writers as well. So that's good news. And I thank you for all that you've done with that. But I have an unusual question for you. I'd like to know, have you read the book, The Elephant Whisperer by Lawrence Anthony, and then a follow-up book that his wife wrote, Elephant in My Kitchen, because it gives such a wonderful perspective on elephants. And I just am curious if you've read either of those books.
I have not read them, and I should. Thank you for the suggestion. I mean, I did some research around elephants when I was writing the prologue of the book, especially the preface. Because I write about elephants and the prologue in the first article, and they're fascinating creatures. But I have not read much more than the research I did, and I should read more. So thank you, Alice, for those references.
You're welcome, and they're both available on Bard. Thank you.
Thank you, Alice.
This is Deborah, and speaking of Bard, I'm going to jump in and ask something else before I forget. And that is, two of your books are on Bard, and I wondered if you could tell everyone what involvement you had in getting that done, and if writing elephants is in the queue.
So let me answer the question about Riding Elephants. Riding Elephants is being recorded as we speak, and it's supposed to come out in either late winter or early spring. So when that happens, I will, of course, make a big announcement. So I do want to share a story about the first book I wrote, which is the memoir, Breaking Barriers, Working and Loving While Blind. So I wrote the book and called the Wolfner Library, which is the Library for the Blind in Missouri, and said, would you consider recording this? And they said, yes. And so I forgot about it until I got an email from a friend of mine saying, are you aware that your book is now available on Bard? It's doing really well on Bard. Well, it was not recorded by Wolfner because they were just in the process of starting the book. It was recorded by another library. I still don't know which library did it. And I still don't know how they had the idea of recording it, because it was my first book. And usually, you know, the Library for the Blind are pretty careful about recording first books of authors, but somebody recorded it. And I still don't know how it happened, how it happened. It's one of the mysteries of my authorship, how it happened. I still don't know how it happened. You know, I'm grateful that it happened. And it was recorded really well. I was really pleased with the narration. And the third book, Riding Elephants, there was a library that had said they wanted to do it, and it was not Missouri. And so I forgot about it. And I got a call from the Wolfner Library saying, we're getting calls from people saying, "When you know, is your Riding Elephants book out? We don't even know what Riding Elephants is." And I said, oh, well, it's my third book. Do you want to record it? And they said, yes. And that's literally what happened, because the other library in the other state, which will remain nameless, said they wanted to do it and never did it. So now, Wolfner Library is recording it. And I think will come out in late winter, early spring.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So it's a different reader for each.
It's a different reader for each. And for those who want to read Riding Elephants, you can get it on Bookshare if you're on Bookshare. And of course, you can get it on Amazon and other places like that. So that's the answer.
Yeah. We have two more people that have their hands raised.
Okay.
Kate Chamberlain. And then after Kate, we have Diane Landy.
Thank you. I have read the two books Alice mentioned, and they really are delightful. But Peter, I was wondering how you and your elephant decided on the publisher you did.
Well, the first two books were done by iUniverse. And the only reason I chose iUniverse is because a friend of mine was the president of the organization. I got a steep discount on their rates. And I would not recommend iUniverse to anybody because they just charge too much. The one thing I'll say about iUniverse, is that they have fabulous editors, and especially for my first book, it was incredibly helpful. The editor that I had helped me sort of reshape the memoir. The most current book I did through LDL Books, Leonora and David Dworkin, who were fabulous.
DLD Books.
Thank you.
David.
Sorry about
and
that.
Leonora Dworkin.
Yeah, I know. I just said the name wrong. Yeah. Thank you. But they did a great job. I very much appreciate the editing that Leonora did, especially, and the computer things that David did, and getting it on Amazon and all that great stuff. It was a pleasure working with them. And they charged a lot less than iUniverse does, and did a better job besides. So, I will always encourage people to use their services. And Leonard and I had had several conversations about certain parts of the book that really helped me sort of rethink some of the things that I said. Well, not that I said, but how I said them. And so I'm grateful for Leonard, especially, about all those things. And thank you, Kate.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Okay, Diane, you're up.
Hello, thank you, and thanks for being here tonight. My question is kind of more about your process, but I'm also curious about, I just find it really interesting. You're not passionate about the writing, but you really enjoy the revision. I'm on board with you about that, and I'm not passionate about the writing just because it's just not, my first drafts are horrible. And I have to do a lot of, it's more than editing, it's really revision. And I've just begun working on outlining a novel piece. So I'm kind of curious about your process. And also just kudos for finishing three books for someone who isn't passionate about writing. I kind of came to writing later in life and I love it, but I think what I really love about it is the rewriting, because that's when it really shines to me and it sparkles. And so, you know, do you set aside your mornings, and are you someone who outlines beforehand? Do you just kind of get it down on the page and then let it set for a while before you go back to do your revision work or your editing? I'm kind of curious about those sorts of things. If you could elaborate, that would be wonderful.
Sure. So my first two books, my second and third book are based on blog posts that I wrote. And so basically, I tried to get in the habit of writing a blog post every Wednesday morning. So every Wednesday morning, I'd get, when every Wednesday morning came up, I had a general sense of what I wanted to write about and what I wanted to say. And so I'd go to the coffee place or I'd go somewhere that was not in my where I live, and write whatever it was I was going to write. And one of the things that I'm proud of about these blog posts that serve as the material for both books 2 and 3 is that they're all short. They're almost all of them under 750 words. And I did write pretty free flowing when it came to the blog posts that I wrote, and then I spent often, you know, an hour or two just making it work, you know, because what I found is that the structure didn't work, or, you know, it was the wrong word, or, you know, the sentences were too long, you know, all the things that we writers, you know, obsess about. I obsess about.
Oh, I obsess.
So by the time they were posted, there were things. Your question reminds me of something else, which I wanted to say, which is one of the things when I was writing about my blog posts, I wanted to write about stuff that wasn't disability related, for two reasons. One, because there's so many people who do such a good job doing that sometimes I feel superfluous when I do that kind of writing. But the other issue is, I'm tired of us being labeled as you know, we write about disability, nothing else. Mm-hmm. And Charles Krautheimer is a political writer who uses a wheelchair and wrote a lot about politics, much of which I disagreed with. But he was a really good writer and wrote about everything but disability. And I thought, well, if he can do that, I can do that. And also, I just have lots of interests, many of which are only peripherally related to connected with disability, and sometimes not related to disability at all. So I really made an effort to, and there are times when I do write about it, and I bring disability in, my blindness into the topics that I write about, some more than others. But anyway, that's sort of off a tangential thing. But basically, I got to the place, I had a pretty good sense of what I wanted to write. The other thing that I would say about this is, I'm a musician, I'm a composer, and I'm a percussionist. And that has had a major impact in how I think about writing, especially sentence structure. I'm really conscious about how these sentences feel rhythmically, because I'm a percussionist. And so I'll write, you know, I really make an effort to vary the length of sentences, and sometimes they're jagged and sometimes they're more flowing. And that's something I really think a lot about, and also how I structure things, because when you compose, you think about structure a lot. And especially when I was writing my memoir, that was a really important part that helped me think about structure in a way that if I hadn't been a musician, I'm not sure I would have been able to do as clearly and as effectively. That's a long answer to your question.
That's interesting, because I write for children, and so the sound of it being read aloud is really important. And especially if it's a picture book, you have to allow room for these illustrations. So there's a lot of different layers of revision where you've got to go through it. But I love that idea of how the music has inspired you to really be conscientious of kind of the pacing of the work and how it sounds on the page. So when you wrote on a Wednesday morning, let's say for your blog post, would you'd get it out there and you'd write the full post and then poof, post it off into your blog right then? Or would you look at it again another day before it go out?
Usually I wrote it and then I put it aside for 24 hours and I come back to it. And, you know, I make a couple of small changes, nothing major usually, but, you know, some things I noticed that I thought, this is not what I wanted to say. I want to say this a little differently. So I usually gave it 24 hours before I posted it. And that helped.
Okay. Did you outline the elephant's book? And I'm sorry, this is my last question. I'll let the next person go.
No, actually I did not because they're all blog posts. So
Okay. Yeah.
Go ahead, Jeff.
This is Deborah,
It's Annie. We have 10 minutes, so we have two more questions.
Thank you. Bye.
I want to give a couple of minutes for Marilyn, our current president, behind our eyes to close it out.
That's what I was going to do. Okay. All right. I mean, that's what I was going to do is turn it over, but go ahead.
All right. So
we have Marsha Wick's been waiting to ask a question, and then after that Marlene, and that's it. Please be quick.
Okay, I'll try to be quick. Peter, it's great to hear your voice. I have a lot of respect for your temperament. Haven't read your writing other than on the BOE Writers Party line, but hot topic. I'm going to focus more on your intention to help us find common ground. And you mentioned the abortion issue. And I would assume one of the ways when you bring opposing groups together is you help us find a way to agree to disagree. Given the law that doesn't allow us to make a personal choice and disagree, what is your advice to help us find common ground now?
So let me respond. I could spend an hour on this question and we don't have that kind of time. So let me say the following. One of the themes of the book is the idea of channeling, that we all think and speak on a thoughts channel and a feelings channel. And when these conversations are really effective, both channels are in operation. And there's a lot more to be said about that. But the one thing I will say beyond that is, storytelling is a really powerful way of finding common ground, because storytelling, a really good story, functions on both channels simultaneously. And so when we were working on the abortion issue, when I was working on that project, we would ask people, and these were activists on both sides of the issue, to share their experience about what prompted them to get to where they are. What is their life story? What prompted them to to come to where they are on the whatever the issue is, the abortion issue. And that people listened and they thought about it. And that whole process of getting people to share their stories made it much easier when it became time to have those difficult conversations to say, listen, I really like you. Affection is a feeling. I like you. I respect you. We don't agree, and that's somehow that's okay now. We don't agree on certain things. The things we do agree on, but those things that we don't agree on, that's okay because we have a prior relationship. And so, what I always tell people when I did this work, and when I still do it occasionally, is don't start with a complicated topic. Start with just getting to know each other a little bit. You know, find out a little bit about each other, and then from there, you know, move on to the complicated, tough issue. I hope that helps a little bit, but there's a lot more to be said about that.
Yeah, it does help on a personal level. It's the legislation now that precludes that.
Well, I'll
mute.
One more thing I will say, and I say it in the book too, that the major issue on the abortion issue is not the morality of abortion. That's not what divides us. It does divide us. I'm not saying it doesn't, but the real controversy is the government's role in the issue.
Right.
We could say a lot more about that, and we will not.
Thank you, Peter. Person?
Thank you.
Marlene had a question, and then after that, we'll throw it back to Deborah and Marilyn.
Thank you. Quickly, Peter, could you talk a little bit about being a podcast host, what your podcast is, and what's coming up tomorrow?
Ah, yes. Well, actually, I host, I think, four different podcasts these days, or co-host, I should say. The one that I think you're referring to is a podcast that Bob Branco and I co-host. And every week, it's a sort of a general interest thing. Deborah's been on that show. Annie's been on that show. There are other people been on that show. And tomorrow, Leonard Tuchiner was going to be on about his book, Merlin the Magic Turtle. We're very much looking forward to interviewing him. And we hope all of you will join us tomorrow, and we'll send you out the link when we have it. So that's tomorrow at 5 p.m. East Coast time. And one of the things I've discovered doing these podcasts is how much I enjoy interviewing people. And again, trying to structure it in a way that makes sense to both the interviewee and the listener. And that's a whole other art form, which we could talk about. And thank you, Marley, for the promotion.
Okay, so if that is the end of the questions, before turning it over to the Behind Our Eyes leaders for final business announcements, Peter, first of all, I just want to thank you personally for inviting me to do this with you, because I consider it a privilege and it's been fun. And why don't you give the name of your book again and tell people where they can get it, and if you'd like to, how they can find you.
Okay. So the title of the book is Riding Elephants, Creating Common Ground Where Contention Rules. Notice the alliteration. That was deliberate. And I don't think I would have thought about that without percussion. Creating common ground contention, right? That's just how my weird mind thinks. If you go to Amazon and type that title in, you'll find it immediately along with my other books. If you want to go to learn more about me, you can find me through Leonor's website, which is dldbooks.com, and then /Peter Altschul once you get there. And you'll see some of my music. You'll see some of my Twitter posts. You'll see all kinds of things, information about my three books. And if you want to sort of check all that stuff out, that's what I would recommend you do. And Deborah, it's been a privilege to be interviewed by you. And thank you for doing
this. Thanks. It's been great.
We should do more of it.
All righty. This is Annie. Peter, could you spell your last name for people who may know?
It's not what's on the transcript. You have to ignore that. The last name is spelled, and it's a complicated name. That's why I'm encouraging you to go. If you go to Amazon, just type in the title, it'll be easier to find. But my last name is spelled A-L-T as in Tom, S as in Sam, C as in Cat, H as in Harry, U-L-A-L-T-S-C-H-U-L. And thank you, Annie, for that question.
You're welcome.
Let's see. Peter, I really need to tell people, if you go to Amazon to look for the book, it's actually, you'll find the book much more easily if you put in his name. Because if you put in Riding Elephants, unless you have the whole title, the subtitle, if you put in Riding Elephants, you're mainly going to get, you're going to see a bunch of books about riding elephants on safaris. Okay. But if you go to Amazon and type in Peter Altschul, you will all of his books show up right away there. So I
thank you, Leonor.
Thank you, Leonor.
Sure.
No, thank you. A-L-T-S-C-H-U-L. A-L-T-S-C-H-U-L. Thank you, Annie. Thank you, Leonor. And thank you for the opportunity.
Marilyn, would you like to say something about Behind Our Eyes?
Yes. I'm the newly elected president, so I'm here for a couple of years. And I am doing this so that people who will hear this book launch later will understand what the writers group is. I've been with Behind Our Eyes since it was founded in 2006. And if you're a writer with disabilities or know someone who is, share the information. I really enjoyed hearing about Peter's book, tonight. A lot of thought-provoking things here, as Marcia pointed out. And I know many of the attendees here are members, but for those who aren't, I want to invite you to visit our website and check us out in case you're interested in furthering your writing skills. We have a wonderful email list that is low traffic and very high concentration on writing itself. And on our website, which is behindoureyes.org, you can see the calendar for upcoming events, conferences, workshops, critique opportunities, and that sort of thing. We hope to add classes in the not too distant future. But if you follow the link to join, that will take you to our membership form. And you can complete that, submit it, and when you join, someone will reach out to you from our welcoming committee. One of the pilots, as we call it, will reach out and answer any questions you might have, help you find a place where you might like to start fitting into our work. I know that the book launch is one of our newer projects. We certainly enjoy doing all the writing that we do together and producing recordings and that sort of thing. Magazines, we have one that comes out twice a year. So if you have any interest, do visit behindoureyes.org. And by all means, don't forget to come to the book launch in November. Leonard Teichner will be doing a presentation on his book. Thanks.
Good night, everybody. Good night. Hi, everybody. This is Annie Chepetta. Welcome to the Behind Our Eyes book launch interview with Peter Altschul and Deborah Kendrick. It's October 6th, 2022. Everybody, welcome. And I'm going to hand this over to Deborah to start.
Okay. Thank you so much, Annie. I'm going to tell you a little bit about this book and a little bit about Peter, but we're mostly going to hear from Peter about the book. Riding Elephants, Creating Common Ground Where Contention Rules is Peter Altschul's third book, and it's not about safaris. How can we create common ground at home, on the job, and in faith communities?
How can we work together better to address those contentious culture war conflicts that divide us by becoming better at riding our quirky feelings, elephants, through marshaling our less quirky thoughts? This concept is explored through brief essays on topics ranging from family life, organization behavior and music, to Christianity, public policy, and politics. The essays focus on lessons drawn from the author's experience interviewing for jobs, raising stepchildren, playing music, training New York City taxi drivers, watching sports, shepherding dogs, finding common ground on abortion, leading diversity programs, and loving his wife. They suggest that common ground does exist if we can find patience, skill, and grace to create it. Peter Altschul currently lives in Columbia, Missouri. This is his third published book. I first knew about Peter's writing when he contacted me about a decade ago. He wanted some input from another writer, and he was writing a book and he wanted me to take a look at it, make comments, write a blurb. I did it because that's what you do. I did it to be nice. I didn't really know him very well, but what I remember is being really blown away by the book and really enjoying it. And I can still remember, it's probably been 10 years since I read it, but the scene that he drew of his wedding and the music and the friends, it was just vivid and vibrant and just beautiful writing. I really like what Peter wrote himself about the author at the end of this book we're going to talk about. So I'm going to share that too, because I think there are a couple of eyebrow raisers in it. About the author, for some unknown reason, Peter Altschul was born totally blind. I like that, by the way. Since graduating from college, he has traveled a unique journey. Customer service rep at the most hated federal government agency. And yes, you are going to have to tell us who that was. Musician, author, trainer of New York City taxi drivers, educator, step-parent of three children, grants manager, and mediator for pro-choice, pro-life activists, and workplace diversity specialist.
all done with the assistance and companionship of six wonderfully quirky guide dogs. So, Peter, I have a lot of questions for you, but for fun, why don't you tell us what that most hated federal government agency was, first of all?
It's the Internal Revenue Service.
I thought so. That
was my first job out of undergraduate school. And I did that for 4 years and couldn't wait to move on to something else.
Well, for those who have not read Riding Elephants, I, first of all, strongly recommend it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. There's so much thought here and so many places where you want to go back, read that again, think about that again. But I think there are a couple of places that I want to visit. By the way, I do have to say, Peter, thank you so much for mentioning my name in the same book where you mentioned Aretha Franklin and Amanda Gorman. Doesn't get much better than that.
So, happy to do it.
So, but with that, I love what you wrote about the Aretha Franklin song. And why don't we start there? Because that tells us a little bit about you as a musician and an author and a thinker. And I'd just like to hear you talk about it.
Well, the first time I heard Aretha sing, I was a 10-year-old kid in white bread New York State and really wasn't that familiar with Motown. I sort of was, but not a lot. But Aretha really got my attention, that song Respect of Hers. And it really sort of changed the way I listened to music in a very powerful way. I can't say more than that. It's just I heard things differently after that song. Aretha sort of popped up in my life, you know, at weird moments. I mean, we all know she had a huge career, went on for many years and many different guises. And, you know, growing up, I was just beginning to start learning to play the drums. And she had such a rhythmic drive, and she had a band with such a rhythmic drive to it, that it really sort of influenced the way I play drums then and still play drums now. And of course, her voice doesn't need to be added to comment about that. So anyway, when she died, Sirius XM had a channel devoted to her music, which I listened to quite a lot when I wrote that piece. And I had no idea of sort of the diversity of her styles, especially later. I mean, she actually sang hip hop music to hip hop beats, which I didn't know. And I didn't know a lot about her civil rights background. And that was really interesting. I mean, she really played a key role in that whole that whole scene. And one more comment, the word respect, what does it mean to respect people? And what she essentially says is, find out what it means to me and then do it, right? R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me, R-E-S-P-E-C-T. So, you know, it's in order to respect, you have to sort of know what it means for the other person to be respected, which might not be the same thing as what makes you feel respected. And so I talk about the platinum rule, which is not the golden rule. And the platinum rule says, treat others as they want to be treated, not the golden rule, which is treat others the way you want to be treated. And that had a powerful impact on me as well. So anyway, it was just one of those pieces. Aretha had a very powerful part of my life, at a influential part of my life. You know, 10 years old is a time when you just begin to start growing and reaching out beyond yourself. And she was one of those people.
Fabulous. I got to hear her, by the way, at one of the last concerts she did before she died in August of 2017. It's fabulous. There are so many places that I could revisit, but one that I kept going back to is near the beginning of the book. You're talking about rubber bands and so forth, and you say, again, folks, if you
haven't read the book, there is so much thought here about differences and diversity and coming together, i.e. creating common ground. But this particular few sentences, just I kept coming back. Some Jews who criticize Israel are accused by other Jews of not being really Jewish. Some African Americans accuse Blacks with conservative views of not being Black enough. Some ISIS members behead Muslims who don't believe as they do. And you do mention disability as you lead into that. But of course, for those of us who are blind or who have other disabilities, this just resonates on such a deep level. And I just thought it would be interesting to hear you talk a little bit about that from a disability perspective and how we as people with disabilities might find common ground or might not treat one another as well as we might.
Well, so a couple of comments. The first is that we talk about with admiration those people who reach across those barriers to find common ground with people who strongly disagree with you. You know, so I did that work a lot in the abortion issue, for example, and that was great work and it's work I'm very proud of. But one of the things I've come to realize over time that maybe the harder work is to help people in your own group to be more effective listeners or to be more effective advocates. And the, one of the things that we do not do to be an effective advocate is to criticize people of your own group that you don't agree with and it at the level that we're talking about. So those things that I mentioned about folks who are Jewish and folks who are African Americans and folks who are ISIS is real. And this happens in every group. It doesn't matter if you're disabled, non-disabled. And it is the responsibility, I think, of those of us in whatever group you choose to be in to say things like, hey, to people who don't agree with the basic whatever of the group, that doesn't mean we kill you, whether it be physically or symbolically. It means we don't agree on certain things, but we might agree on other things. And I really do think that in today's politics, we have so much going on where within groups, the sort of cancel culture, which exists on both the right and the left, that it's just destructive. It's destructive, not just for having those conversations across those barriers, but within the groups as well. It's just destructive. And the more we can do as members of those groups to discourage that kind of behavior, I think the better off we're all going to be.
I think we do it as blind people. We say, oh, well, Stevie Wonder might be fabulous, musician, rich and famous, but did you know he can't find his way out of the room? So those kinds of things. Or someone did such and such really well. Well, that's because they have some usable vision. But either end of the spectrum, I think we do that.
And this whole ACB versus NFB thing is just, there are clearly differences. And that's fine.
Yeah.
But some of the stuff I hear from both groups with the other group is just wildly destructive for us as advocates and us as people.
Peter, now that would be the ultimate coup. I have been saying for years that I believe I will live long enough to see them merge as one because they should. But now that would be the ultimate coup. Then you could write a whole book just about that, about the finding the coup. we should take a look at that. So talk to us about, I like the whole idea of riding elephants and elephants as feelings and thoughts, but talk about the origin of that and your thought processes of carrying that through to be the title and theme of your book.
Well, the idea came from a guy named Jonathan Haidt, H-A-I-D-T. No, it's not the hate, it's the hate, H-A-I-D-T. and he's a social psychologist. Who wrote a book about this whole topic. And one of his ideas, as I write in the book, that elephants, he calls them intuitions, which I think are close to feelings, if not feelings directly. And feelings, he argues, and I sort of expand on, is the energy behind what we do. It's not the thoughts, it's the feelings. The feelings is the energy. And that we, as elephant riders, can be more effective at riding our elephants or controlling our feelings and steering them in positive direction. Feelings are great things if harnessed effectively. Elephants are just amazing animals. They're herd animals. They roam in herds and they look after their young and they look after their old and they're very playful. And all those things are true about them. But if they get upset, they can trample and cause all kinds of destruction. And you don't want elephants to trample. That's not something that you want to be a part of if you can avoid it. And the same thing is true about feelings. You know, feelings, if used effectively, can be amazingly powerful things and are amazingly powerful things. And I write a lot about that in the book.
So in the process of pulling these pieces together as a book, Which came first, assembling them and deciding later that elephants was the thread that could tie them together, or first thinking about riding elephants and wanting to find the pieces that fit into that?
It's definitely the, well, actually, I should back up. My prior book is called Connecting the Dots. It's the same subtitle, Creating Common Ground While Contention, Breaking It Down to Connecting the Dots. You think I would know this, right? Breaking It Down to Connecting the Dots. And so I wrote that book. And one of the things I didn't like about that book is the blog posts, I think, were equally good that I used as the kernels of the book, but there was no common theme. And so when I wrote the Riding Elephants, I thought, okay, how can I make this more organic? And the whole kernel of both books was this idea of elephants as feelings, and we ride our elephants through our thoughts. And so I really made an effort when I wrote this book, Riding Elephants, to really use that elephant as the theme. And you'll see throughout the book, I talk about my elephant grumbling, or my elephant becoming restless, or my elephant celebrating, yeah, my elephant doing whatever. And that was deliberate. When I wrote the original blogs on which the books are based, you don't see that in the original blogs. But when I went through and edited the book, I made an effort to sort of use that elephant theme in hopefully creative ways. That's the history behind all of that.
Well, it works.
Well, thank you.
How often do you write your blog? How frequently?
Actually, I haven't written a blog for about a year. There are complicated reasons for that. I've gone through a fairly traumatic personal life, which just made me not want to write. I'm sort of coming out of that now. But the other issue is I've written two books on this whole issue of creating common ground and feelings and thoughts and all those concepts that are in these books. And I'm not quite sure what I want to do next writing wise. And I've been thinking a lot about it, and I have some ideas, but I just don't have a sense of where to go next. And you know, as I said, over the past year, I've had to move twice. I'm going through some difficult times, which I will talk about other times, but not now. And it's just been a difficult time. And so the writing is sort of gone on a back burner. And the other thing I should say about that is I know there are many folks on this call that they find they're passionate about writing, that for them, writing is a serious passion. And that's awesome. And I admire that. But it's never been true for me. Writing has never been a passion of mine. I do it because it helps me communicate, but it's not something I am passionate about doing. It's not something that makes my elephant dance. It's something that makes my elephant sort of, okay, I got to do this. It makes the elephant, not especially excited. And so it's not something that I, as compared to my music, which makes my elephant dance, or when I educate in the work that I've done, make my elephant dance. But writing never has done that for my elephant. It's just different.
Another thing that's interesting about what you say about your own writing and the motivation to write is that I think for many people, times of struggle and despair and trauma, when many of us write the most. And yet you're saying that the opposite is true. You're going through difficult times. You don't want to write. You can't write.
Yeah, I don't want. It's just not something I want to do. And maybe there'll come a time when I will want to do that. I haven't forsworn writing forever and ever. But, this isn't the time right now. I'm trying to figure out what my next impetus is to write. And I have some thoughts on the matter. And maybe I'll be there tomorrow. Maybe I'll be there a year from now. But I will write again. What I find in doing a lot more these days is helping people with their writing. I very much enjoy doing that. I love the editing process more than the actual putting things down. I think honing a piece and making it shine and making it crystalline clear, I enjoy that part more than the actual putting it down. That's just me. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you have had a fair amount of experience working with groups, bringing groups together, finding common ground. Can you choose one such experience that you've had that you're particularly proud of and tell us about that?
It's funny you should ask that question because somebody else asked me a similar question in a job interview. I was working in Glendale, Arizona, working with the community to help them develop strategies to prevent teen pregnancy that the entire community could get behind. When I first showed up there the first day, the agency that was coordinating this work drove us around the community. And the community was divided in half between northern half, which was the white bread part of the community, and then the southern half had this large Latino population. And so I said to the person convening the organization, convening this project, what's the relations between the two parts of the organization? And she said, I never go to this part of the community. I don't know these people. I don't know who they are. And my basic reaction was, excuse me? I didn't say this, of course, but how could you be a community organizer and not take half of the community seriously? So I sort of talked around and tried to find out who the leader of the Latino part of the community was. And when I got back to Washington, I got a hold of her and said, hey, we're doing this project. We very much would like to get you involved. Would you consider it? She said, yeah, but I don't know anything about the other part of the community. Don't talk to me. I said, well, I will try to make that happen. And so I called the representative who I was working with and said, hey, they want to work with you. Do you want to work with them? And she said, well, I don't know. I said, well, you can't do this without having the entire community involved. It ain't going to work. So she was clearly really nervous about it. So I said, okay, well, the next time I come out there, we'll schedule a meeting. And so, we scheduled a time and they all showed up in a neutral territory. I can't remember where it was we all met. And so I just sort of served as a mediator and got them to talk about each other, to talk to each other about their experiences and what their communities were experiencing. And after the meeting, I was sort of nervous. I wasn't sure how it was going to play itself out. After the meeting, they became friends. And they start talking to each other, and it totally changed the way the dialogue ran. And one of the things that came out of it is that there were sort of youth groups on both sides of the border, if you will, and they went on a weekend retreat and actually got to like each other and know each other. And it really was a sort of a fabulous thing. And of course, they worked together on the dialogue and there are some councilmen who got involved who were representing that part, the Latino part of the community. And it really was a wonderful thing to sort of see grow. And so the dialogue was a success. That connection, when at least when I was there, was vibrant and really exciting. I don't know what's happened since, but while I was there, it was a great, great thing.
That's fabulous. Are you looking toward doing more of that sort of thing, or are you kind of in a holding pattern right now?
Well, I'm actually applying for jobs that would give me the chance to do more of that stuff. Now, whether they'll hire me is a different conversation. But I've applied to several jobs that have a major community building component, and so we'll see what happens. But I am trying to sort of get back into that life, if you will. As I said, it's been a difficult couple of years, and I'm trying to sort of, get out of it. So we'll see what happens.
Well, I always like to ask writers about their writing habits and writing process, but you're telling us you haven't been writing for a while. But when you were, are there any tips that you'd like to share, or quirks maybe, or, patterns that you follow in terms of your writing life when you are writing?
I find it easier to write it not in my apartment. So that might mean writing outside on a deck. When I had a house, that's what I did. With the sun out and the wind and the birds chirping, that was wonderful. Or writing it at a coffee house. I don't particularly like coffee, but it was nice to be able to get out and walk the mile to the coffee house, buy a tea actually. And write for a couple of hours there. I wrote at a church, room. So I just find it hard to write where I live. I need to be in a different space. And the other thing, as I said before, is I very much enjoy more the editing process than the actual putting it down. And what I had to learn to do is not to worry so much about the editing when I'm writing it down. I know that I'll come back to it and make it shine, or make it better shine, or whatever it is. So just to get it down on paper, and that's been really hard for me because I like to get every sentence perfect. But then of course you run the risk of losing the thread that you're trying to get down. So that's been a challenge. But that's really the only thing I can say. And then the requisite, try to get, input from other people and all that stuff is really valuable. But for me, I really very much enjoy, once the stuff's on paper, the ideas, how can I make this work in a cohesive kind of way? that will make people want to read it.
Well, I think that's wonderful to recognize that, because I learned long ago, and you know, sometimes we don't know things until we have to do them, but editing and writing are really two completely different talents, and both are really essential if we're all going to have good things to read. So maybe there's another kind of future there for you in just doing some editing. I really like hearing you talk about going somewhere else to write to. I completely get that. I've gone through phases. When I was in college, this shows how old I am, I had a typewriter. I thought it was the coolest thing that I had a portable typewriter that I could carry to sit under a tree. And I was convinced that, you know, with my guitar under that tree or my typewriter under that tree, the most beautiful words would emerge. So anyway, I get it. I see that we have 22 people. And so that's 20 people who might have questions for you. So I don't want to monopolize Peter. Why don't we open it up at this point, Annie? And I don't know who's doing the monitoring. It's not.
I am doing the monitoring. So if you have a question, please raise your hand and I'll call on you, and then you can unmute and ask your question. Marlene has a question.
Oh, Marlene. Okay.
Yes.
Because cool. I can come up with more. Never fear.
Oh, I'm sure. Okay.
And then after Marlene, we can do Alice, and then we'll go. Okay. We'll go to the next two.
Okay. All right, Marlene.
Hi, I just thought I'd let you know, Peter, on the transcript, you have a new last name. It's now I'll Show.
That's okay. Thank you for that bit of data. My elephant doesn't quite know what to make of it. He's sort of bewildered, you know.
We'll fix it.
Thank you.
Oh, dear. Okay. All right. There was somebody else.
Alice.
Well, again, Peter, congratulations on 3 wonderful books. I enjoyed reading each of these and look forward to number 4. I hope one of these days. I find it interesting that passion is not your writing, because you're such a good writer. But I'm very glad to hear that you're interested in editing, because you do give wonderful advice about writing to writers as well. So that's good news. And I thank you for all that you've done with that. But I have an unusual question for you. I'd like to know, have you read the book, The Elephant Whisperer by Lawrence Anthony? And then a follow-up book that his wife wrote, Elephant in My Kitchen, because it gives such a wonderful perspective on elephants. And I just am curious if you've read either of those books.
I have not read them, and I should. Thank you for the suggestion. I mean, I did some research around elephants when I was writing the prologue of the book, especially the preface, because I write about elephants and the prologue in the first article. And they're fascinating creatures, but I have not read much more than the research I did, and I should read more. So thank you, Alice, for those references.
You're welcome. And they're both available on Bard. Thank you.
Thank you, Alice.
Okay. This is Deborah. And speaking of Bard, I'm going to jump in and ask something else before I forget. And that is, 2 of your books are on Bard, and I wondered if you could tell everyone what involvement you had in getting that done, and if writing elephants is in the queue.
So let me answer the question about writing elephants. Writing elephants is being recorded as we speak. It's supposed to come out in either late winter or early spring. So when that happens, I will, of course, make a big announcement. I do want to share a story about the first book I wrote, which is the memoir, Breaking Barriers, Working and Loving While Blind. I wrote the book and called the Wolfner Library, which is the Library for the Blind in Missouri, and said, would you consider recording this? And they said, yes. And so I forgot about it until I got an email from a friend of mine saying, are you aware that your book is now available on Bard and it's doing really well on Bard? Well, it was not recorded by Wolfner, because they were just in the process of starting the book. It was recorded by another library. I still don't know which library did it. And I still don't know how they got the idea of recording it. It was my first book. And usually the Library for the Blind are pretty careful about recording first books of authors. But somebody recorded it. And I still don't know how it happened. It's one of the mysteries of my authorship, how it happened. I still don't know how it happened. I'm grateful that it happened. And it was recorded really well. I was really pleased with the narration. And the third book, The Riding Elephants, there was a library that had said they wanted to do it, and it was not Missouri. And so I forgot about it. And I got a call from the Wolfner Library saying, we're getting calls from people saying, when is your Riding Elephants book out? We don't even know what Riding Elephants is. And I said, oh, well, it's my third book. Do you want to record it? And they said, yes. And that's literally what happened, because the other library in the other state, which will remain nameless, said they wanted to do it and never did it. So Wolfner Library is recording it. And it's, I think it will come out in late winter, early spring.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So it's a different reader for each.
It's a different reader for each. And for those who want to read Riding Elephants, you can get it on Bookshare if you're on Bookshare. And of course, you can get it on Amazon, you know, other places like that. That's the answer.
We have two more people that have their hands raised.
Okay.
Kate Chamberlain. And then after Kate, we have Diane Landy.
Thank you. I have read the two books Alice mentioned, and they really are delightful. But Peter, I was wondering how you and your elephant decided on the publisher you did.
Well, the first two books were done by iUniverse. And the only reason I chose iUniverse is because a friend of mine was the president of the organization. I got a steep discount on their rates. And I would not recommend iUniverse to anybody because they just charge too much. The one thing I'll say about iUniverse is that they have fabulous editors. And especially for my first book, it was incredibly helpful. The editor that I had helped me reshape the memoir. The most current book I did through DLD Books, Leonora and David Dvorkin. Who are fabulous. Thank you. They did a great job. I very much appreciate the editing that Leonora did, especially, and the computer things that David did, and getting it on Amazon and all that great stuff. It was a pleasure working with them, and they charge a lot less than iUniverse does and did a better job besides. So I will always encourage people to use their services. And Leonora and I had several conversations about certain parts of the book that really helped me rethink some of the things that I said. Well, not what I said, but how I said them. And so I'm grateful for Leonor, especially about all those things. Thank you, Kate.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Okay, Diane, you're up.
Hello, thank you. And thanks for being here tonight. My question is kind of more about your process, but I'm also curious. I just find it really interesting. You're not passionate about the writing, but you really enjoy the revision. I'm on board with you about that. And I'm not passionate about the writing just because it's just not my first drafts or horrible. And I have to do a lot of, it's more than editing, it's really revision. And I've just begun working on outlining a novel piece. So I'm kind of curious about your process. And also just kudos for finishing three books for someone who isn't passionate about writing. I kind of came to writing later in life and I love it, but I think what I really love about it is the rewriting, because that's when it really shines to me and it sparkles. Do you set aside your mornings, and are you someone who outlines before, and do you just kind of get it down on the page and then let it set for a while before you go back to do your revision work or your editing? I'm kind of curious about those sorts of things. If you could elaborate, that would be wonderful.
Sure. So my second and third book are based on blog posts that I wrote. And so basically, I tried to get in the habit of writing a blog post every Wednesday morning. When every Wednesday morning came up, I had a general sense of what I wanted to write about and what I wanted to say. I'd go to the coffee place or I'd go somewhere that wasn't where I lived and write whatever it was I was going to write. And one of the things that I'm proud of about these blog posts that serve as the material for both books two and three is that they're all short. They're almost all of them under 750 words. I write pretty free-flowing when it came to the blog posts that I wrote. Then I spent often an hour or two making it work, because what I found is that the structure didn't work, or the wrong word, or the sentences were too long. You know, all the things that we writers obsess about. I obsess about.
Oh, I obsess.
So by the time they were posted, they were thinking. Your question reminds me of something else, which I wanted to say, which is one of the things when I was writing about my blog post, I wanted to write about stuff that wasn't disability related for two reasons. One, because there's so many people who do such a good job doing that, that sometimes I feel superfluous when I do that kind of writing. But the other issue is I'm tired of us being labeled as we write about disability, nothing else. Mm-hmm. And Charles Krautheimer is a political writer who uses a wheelchair and wrote a lot about politics, much of which I disagreed with, but he was a really good writer and wrote about everything but disability. And I thought, well, if he can do that, I can do that. And Also, I just have lots of interests, many of which are only peripherally related, connected with disability, and sometimes not related to disability at all. So I really made an effort to, and there are times when I do write about it and I bring disability in, my blindness into the topics that I write about, some mm-hmm. more than others. So anyway, that's off a tangential thing. But basically, I got to the place, I had a pretty good sense of what I wanted to write. The other thing that I would say about this is I'm a musician, I'm a composer, and I'm a mm-hmm. percussionist. And that has had a major impact in how I think about writing, especially sentence structure. So, you know, I'm really conscious about how these sentences feel rhythmically because mm-hmm. I'm a percussionist. And so I'll write, I really make an effort to vary the length of sentences. And sometimes they're jagged and sometimes they're more flowing. And that's something I really think a lot about. And also how I structure things, because when you compose, you think about structure a lot. And especially when I was writing my memoir, that was a really important part that helped me think about structure in a way that if I hadn't been a musician, I'm not sure I would have been able to do as clearly and as effectively. That's a long answer to the question.
That's interesting because I write for children. And so the sound of it being read aloud is really important. And especially if it's a picture book, you have to allow room for these illustrations. So there's a lot of different layers of revision where you've got to go through it. But I love that idea of how the music has inspired you to really be conscientious of kind of the pacing of the work and how it sounds on the page. So when you wrote on a Wednesday morning, let's say for your blog post, would you'd get it out there, you'd write the full post and then poof, post it off into your blog right then? Or would you look at it again another day before it go out?
So I usually gave it 24 hours before I posted it. And that helped.
Okay. Did you outline the elephant's book? And I'm sorry, this is my last question. I'll let the next person
know. No, actually, I did not, because they're all blog posts.
It's Annie. We have 10 minutes, so we have two more questions.
Thank you.
So I want to give a couple of minutes for Marilyn, our current president, behind our eyes to close it out.
That's what I was going to do. Okay. All right. I mean, that's what I was going to do is turn it over, but go ahead.
So we have Marsha Wick's been waiting to ask a question. And then after that, Marlene, and that's it. Please be quick.
Okay, I'll try to be quick. Peter, it's great to hear your voice. I have a lot of respect for your temperament. Haven't read your writing other than on the BOE Writer's Party line, but hot topic, I'm going to focus more on your intention to help us find common ground. And you mentioned the abortion issue. And I would assume one of the ways when you bring opposing groups together is you help us find a way to agree to disagree. Given the law that doesn't allow us to make a personal choice and disagree, what is your advice to help us find common ground now?
So let me respond. I could spend an hour on this question and we don't right. have that kind of time. So let me say the following. One of the themes of the book is the idea of channeling. We all think and speak on a thoughts channel and a feelings channel. And when these conversations are really effective, both channels are in operation. And there's a lot more to be said about that. But the one thing I will say beyond that is storytelling is a really powerful way of finding common ground, because storytelling, a really good story, functions on both channels simultaneously. And so when we were working on the abortion issue, when I was working on that project, we would ask people, and these were activists on both sides of the issue, to share their experience about what prompted them to get to where they are. What is their life story? What prompted them to come to where they are on whatever the issue is, the abortion issue. And people listened and they thought about it. And that whole process, people to share their stories, made it much easier when it became time to have those difficult conversations to say, listen, I really like you. I like, notice, like affection is a feeling. I like you. I respect you. And we don't agree. And that's somehow, that's okay now. We don't agree on certain things. The things we do agree on, but those things that we don't agree on, that's okay because we have a prior relationship. And so what I always tell people when I did this work, and I still do it occasionally, is don't start with the complicated topic. Start with just getting to know each other a little bit. Find out a little bit about each other. And then from there, move on to the complicated, tough issue. I hope that helps a little bit, but there's a lot more to be said about that.
Yeah, it does help on a personal level. It's the legislation now that precludes that.
One more thing I will say, and I say it in the book too, that the major issue on the abortion issue is not the morality of abortion. That's not what divides us. It does divide us. I'm not saying it doesn't. But the real controversy is the government's role in the issue. And there'll be a lot more about that, and we will not.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
Marlene had a question, and then after that, we'll throw back to Deborah and Marilyn.
Thank you. Quickly, Peter, could you talk a little bit about being a podcast host, what your podcast is, and what's coming up tomorrow?
Ah, yes. Well, actually, I host, I think, 4 different podcasts these days, or co-host, I should say. The one that I think you're referring to is a podcast that Bob Branco and I co-host. And every week, it's a sort of a general interest thing. Deborah's been on that show. Annie's been on that show. There are other people have been on that show. Tomorrow, Leonard Tuchscheiner is going to be on about his book, Merlin the Magic Turtle. We're very much looking forward to interviewing him. And we hope all of you will join us tomorrow, and we'll send you out the link when we have it. So that's tomorrow at 5 p.m. East Coast time. One of the things I've discovered doing these podcasts is how much I enjoy interviewing people. And again, trying to structure it in a way that makes sense to both the interviewee and the listener. That's a whole other art form, which we could talk about. And thank you, Marlene, for the promotion.
Okay, so if that is the end of the questions, before turning it over to the Behind Our Eyes leaders for final business announcements, Peter, first of all, I just want to thank you personally for inviting me to do this with you, because I consider it a privilege and it's been fun. And why don't you give the name of your book again and tell people where they can get it, and if you'd like to, how they can find you?
So the title of the book is Riding Elephants, Creating Common Ground Where Contention Rules. Notice the alliteration. That was deliberate. And I don't think I would have thought about that without percussion. Creating Common Ground Contention, right? That's just how my weird mind thinks. If you go to Amazon and type that title in, you'll find it along with my other books. If you want to go to learn more about me, you can find me through Leonor's website, which is dldbooks.com, and then /Peter Altschul once you get there. You'll see some of my music. You'll see some of my Twitter posts. You'll see all kinds of things, information about my 3 books. And if you want to sort of check all that stuff out, that's what I would recommend you do. And Deborah, it's been a privilege to be interviewed by you. And thank you for doing
this. Thanks. It's been great.
We should do more of it.
All righty. This is Annie. Peter, could you spell your last name for people?
It's not what's on the transcript. You have to ignore that. The last name is spelled, and it's a complicated name. That's why I'm encouraging you to go. If you go to Amazon, type in the title, it'll be easier to find. But my last name is spelled A-L-T as in Tom, S as in Sam, C as in Cat, H as in Harry, U-L. A-L-T-S-C-H-U-L. Thank you, Annie, for that question.
You're welcome.
Let's see. Peter, I really need to tell people, if you go to Amazon to look for the book, it's actually, you'll find the book much more easily if you put in his name. Because if you put in Riding Elephants, unless you have the whole title, the subtitle, if you put in Riding Elephants, you're mainly going to get, you're going to see a bunch of books about riding elephants on safaris. Okay, but if you go to Amazon and type in Peter Altschul, all of his books show up right away there. So I
thank you, Leonor.
Thank you, Leonor.
Sure.
No, thank you. A-L-T-S-C-H-U-L. A-L-T-S-C-H-U-L. Thank you, Annie. Thank you, Leonor. And thank you for the opportunity.
Marilyn, would you like to say something about Behind Our Eyes?
Yes. I'm the newly elected president, so I'm here for a couple of years, and I am doing this so that people who will hear this book launch later will understand what the writers group is. I've been with Behind Our Eyes since it was founded in 2006. And if you're a writer with disabilities or know someone who is, share the information. I really enjoyed hearing about Peter's book tonight. A lot of thought-provoking things here, as Marcia pointed out. And I know many of the attendees here are members. But for those who aren't, I want to invite you to visit our website and check us out in case you're interested in furthering your writing skills. We have a wonderful email list that is low traffic and very high concentration on writing itself. And on our website, which is behindoureyes.org, you can see the calendar for upcoming events, conferences, workshops, critique opportunities, and that sort of thing. We hope to add classes in the not too distant future. But if you follow the link to join, that will take you to our membership form. and you can complete that, submit it, and when you join, someone will reach out to you from our welcoming committee. One of the pilots, as we call it, will reach out and answer any questions you might have, help you find a place where you might like to start fitting into our work. I know that the book launch is one of our newer projects. We certainly enjoy doing all the writing that we do together and producing recordings and that sort of thing. Magazines, we have one that comes out twice a year. So if you have any interest, do visit behindoureyes.org. And by all means, don't forget to come to the book launch in November. Leonard Teichner will be doing a presentation on his book. Thanks.
Good night, everybody. Bye.